So you know that recently I've been kind of unpacking some religious trauma. You know about this.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I've been sending you the TikToks of all the other Christians being like, can we talk about the weird things that we did in our crazy church?
That's really happening though right now. Like online, there's a lot of people our age because we're an age group that grew up going to church without choosing it in like sometimes intense evangelical Christianity. And now there's like a lot of 30-year-olds.
We're kind of the first generation maybe of people who are like really submerged into evangelical nonsense.
And didn't choose it. Like we grew up that way. Right. We didn't come to it later. But I've been thinking about this a lot and it makes me smile. But
okay.
When I was like a child deeply entrenched in evangelical Christianity, there was a lot of fear around magic and sorcery. And I remember like there was a kid at my grandma's church who was a teenager when I was a little kid and he did Dungeons and Dragons and the church had like an intervention about him playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, shit. I love how people get so stressed about this stuff. And it's like, really?
Yes. And I like, because I was in that environment, I was playing this computer game called Majesty, which is like an early version of Civilization. And
I brought up, wait, do you remember the computer game? I literally brought this up with friends last night because I have friends who play D&D. Mm-hmm. And I was like, do you guys remember the computer game Heroes of Might and Magic?
No.
It's the closest, one person knew what I was talking about. It's the closest that I've ever gotten to, I feel like,
this is D&D, probably
but also a computer game.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So like in the same kind of vein, I was playing something that was like a medieval world and I was building a culture.
Yes.
And one of the things you had to do is like create like religious temples and stuff. And so like, because it's like,
You did build temples on this. This is a very similar game to what I was
playing. Excellent. And so when I was playing this at my grandparents' house and I got like so afraid of it that I asked my grandma to take me to return the game because I like felt that it was evil because I was like creating temples for like religions that were not Christ. And
Wow.
That was a lot.
I love small child Jamie.
I know. Wow. Just like
she
so
was really
afraid.
Going through it.
Mm-hmm. Really going through it. And I don't know why no adults were like, that's probably fine. They were like, that's good. You're listening to your spirit. And we took the game back. But something that I didn't have spiritual qualms about was reading Harry Potter, which is like equally or more magical and around the same time.
Right.
But what I was thinking of that's like really been making me laugh is that my grandma's church and lots of churches and lots of evangelicals were really wary of Harry Potter or banned it.
Oh, people were stressed.
So stressed out because they thought that like it was going to lead an entire generation of children into witchcraft. And I just want to like make a gentle nod to the fact that like people our age are like witchcraft is trendy for us now, like in adulthood.
Oh yeah, and witchcraft adjacent, crystals, astrology, tarot,
all of the esoteric stuff,
any kind of mysticism, you know.
Yes. And I wonder like that they were so afraid that like Harry Potter would lead us here, but now that we're on the other side of it, I'm like,
you know, Harry Potter, this aggressively Christ driven narrative.
It is. It's yes it is a Christ narrative. But I am wondering, like, were they right, though? Like, without Harry Potter, like, I don't know if I would be as interested in magic as an adult as I am. And I'm curious about, like, your through line on that.
I've never thought about this in this way, like, about myself, really.
I didn't until recently. Like, yeah.
Is my exposure to kind of, like, magic through this maybe why I'm into some of that stuff as an adult? And, like, yeah, I think probably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because we were so deep in the fantasy of it. And then like, I don't know, I always was wanting there to be like another Harry Potter, like another world for me to dig into like that. And there just wasn't. And so you find the magic in your everyday life. And
well, and I think just even if you open that, you're so funny. If you open that part of like your brain, though, that's like, I don't know, interested in the unexplainable and stuff. It's the same reason people like ghost stories.
The Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, like big puzzles. I don't know. It's just you get invested in that kind of thing. And then like to your point, like thirsty for more of it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just really happy that like the evangelicals were right about that to a degree in way that like
we fully did get pushed to witchcraft. Come for us.
We really did. And I'll own that. And it's fine that you thought that that was happening. And I'm laughing about it. That's all.
And you, maybe you evangelicals were for once right.
Yeah.
Also, welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome. Soul searching to find their true self.
I mean, that is this podcast. So.
It's basically an SVU episode with help from talking rats.
This month in December, please stop douching your genitals.
Who's participating in this study that's like, here, for like the $30, I like came in this cup so 30 different women could taste it. I'm like, who's that guy?
So it fit like a tiny belly shirt with like cap sleeves. And when the ambulance came, like that's what he was wearing.
You're saying all sorts of crazy shit now.
I'm gonna peak in high school and then die.
I do believe in fairies. I do.
Is franchising our platform? We're franchising it, okay?
Wow, something we've never said before on this show. Maybe evangelicals were right.
And I personally hope to never say again. But Why Are You Like This is the weekly podcast where we dissect some part of our culture, human behavior,
evangelicalism,
why we want to be witches, whatever it is at any given time, in order to determine why people are the way that they are. That is Jamie Ryan in Los Angeles.
And that is Austin Williams in Chicago.
Hi.
So on today's episode of Why Are You Like This, we have two very extra special guests, some friends of the pod who have their own pod that we highly recommend. So today with us are the two hosts of Book It podcast, Michael Woodson and Jill Burkett Ragacy. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having us.
We're very excited to have you.
I'm so excited to be here. My name is Jill and I use she, her pronouns.
Yeah, and I'm Michael and I use he, him pronouns.
Yay, welcome.
Well, I'm super excited to get into this, at least for Why Are You Like This? This is the first time we've ever had four people on the mics at once, which
No, it's not.
Oh, you're right. I'm lying. Okay.
But we have a repeat guest from the previous episode where we had four people.
This is our first repeat guest. I'll take, okay, perfect. So we do have a first. Okay, uh-huh. On board. So if you were fortunate enough to listen to our masculinity episode, you may already know a little bit about this, but Michael's back with us.
Hey.
Welcome.
And I'm excited, I guess, to kind of lay the land of how we all know each other, but kind of the beginning of this story, I guess, for the four of us, if we're going chronologically, is Michael and I met in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. We were both rocking bowl cuts like good 90s kids.
What was this, 1996?
Five or something, somewhere in there. But we were like very fast.
Yes, friends. Instant friends.
Yeah, instant friends.
You know what? It probably has something to do with our last names are both W. And when you're at the end of the alphabet, like you
that
hold on to that.
Actually, I think is probably that. Williams Woodson.
Yes.
I actually,
always
that's
in line by each other.
100% what it was. Yeah, that feels right. Mm. Also, our moms liked each other, which is always important.
And our moms had very similar haircuts.
That's true. And glasses. Guys, it was the 90s. It was the 90s, you know?
They both still have those haircuts. I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Listen, we can't derail on our mom's aesthetic because that's really a whole other episode, but
it is.
So, like, sweet fake W twins separated at birth. We were like together in the same grade school for 2 years, like including kindergarten. And then we got split into different neighborhood schools in the district. And I did not see you again until middle school. But in that window of time when we were absent, it was like enter Jamie Ryan, my very next like fast best friend. And then when we all got to middle school, I take like a little bit of onus and pride for making you guys friends, Jamie and Michael.
I was on the lookout for him because you had told me about him.
And what's so funny to me, though, is that Jamie is like I left Brent to go to Cottonwood, and Jamie and I had 1 year. I remember so specifically seeing Jamie like running around on the playground. And then she disappeared and went to Brent. Like we had a crossover year where then she went into your life, and then we all met up again in middle school.
I honestly feel like this is just like we're like the Chicago universe on NBC. Like we've done a lot of crossover episodes. We have reunited all the characters like on a new series.
I prefer Shonderland, but I hear you.
Okay. Listen, I'm not here to come for you, but shout out to Chicago Med. Anyway, so that's kind of like our like wiggle into Book It. But I thought you.
But wait, fast forward to adulthood. Yeah. You and I start a podcast. Then
yes.
Michael starts working at a bookstore where he meets Jill, correct?
Yes.
This is what I want to know.
And at that point, Austin and I are doing Why Are You Like This? And you guys become interested in podcasting?
Yes.
And is that how you met at
at
the bookstore?
Do you want to take it and roast me, Michael?
No.
Oh.
I would never.
All roasting is always welcome.
This is Michael's favorite story.
I don't know what you're talking. Yes, I do. Well, okay. At the time, I was working at a magazine, and then I was kind of just like looking for something else and wanted to get into the book world more. So I moved on to part time at a local indie bookstore, and then worked part time as a freelance writer and editor. And Jill, it was the Blue Manatee Children's Bookstore, and Jill, what you were doing accounting? What were you doing for the bookstore?
Yeah, I was kind of doing bookkeeping and some random things.
Okay, yeah, she was. So I really saw you like very sparingly. I worked like 3 days, 3 or 4 days a week, and Jill worked every day, but came into the office on Fridays or the bookstore on Fridays. And in my part-time work, Jill and I started working really closely. The whole time, I'm like, wow, Jill's a really good friend who I love to work with. And then like right when we start the podcast, literally the first day we sat down to talk about the podcast, I don't even remember how it came up, but I was just saying like, it's so fun to work with friends or something. And Jill was like, we're friends? And I was like,
oh,
yeah, like, burn. Like 13 months on, like, yeah, we're friends, girl.
This does strike me as a story Michael would enjoy telling.
Yes. So Michael always says that he's been friends with me for a year longer than I've been friends with
him. Yes. Because it's the truth. It's the truth that was revealed.
Wow. It's okay. Austin and I hated each other, too.
For 2 years. Earlier. We started out actually as arch nemesis. Nemesis. And I think maybe then the next question, outside of like how we've all kind of been intertwined and know each other individually as co-hosts and that kind of thing, is what do two people who speak about like human behavior and horoscopes with a W and weird pseudoscience have to discuss with people who, how would you like to tagline your show?
We have a tagline. We talk about books frankly.
That's right.
Yeah. Sometimes we're usually pretty kind. Like, I think that we're like, and we're often in agreement, but when we're not in agreement, it's not like Jill's right and Michael's wrong or Michael's right and I'm wrong. It's just like, we have big feelings about books.
I love it. And I feel like we, like our shows have that in common, that we all maybe have like big opinions, which I think facilitates good conversation.
Yes.
But our big opinions and your big opinions are bringing us to the topic of fandoms. So a little bit of like human behavior and psychology of like this community, but also like so tied up in literature, which is, I feel like, the birthplace for, in my opinion, and I know we'll get into it, some of the more important fandoms, I would argue. Sorry, Marvel.
But also graphic novels are books, not to interrupt you.
That's 100%.
That is 100% true.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, I was kind of coming, I think, for the movies.
Yes, yes.
I'll, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm here for that.
It's really coming for Disney. Agree. Like, screw Disney.
Screw Disney.
There it is.
Hot takes.
Yeah.
Guys, we're going to get sued. We're going to have to take that out.
Okay, yeah. And I actually don't mean it. I love you, Disney. I watched Ryan the Last Dragon this weekend. I cried a lot. Like...
But on that note, Jamie, do you want to kind of give us the breakdown of what is a fandom?
Yeah, absolutely. So I know that, like, if you guys have listened to our show, you probably know, and I don't want to assume that you've listened to it, but we often begin with a Wikipedia read.
Just our favorite
resource. Lay some groundwork. And I know that it's not, like, people who are of perhaps older generations will argue that it's not accredited, but it's like a good read on what society thinks.
Yes. Listen,
so for fandoms, we'll grab a definition.
Randy Pausch, The Last Lecture. It's more edited than Webster's. Let's go.
That's true. We did a whole bit on that. Anyway, okay, so Wikipedia tells us that a fandom is a subculture composed of fans characterized by a feeling of empathy and camaraderie with others who share a common interest. Fans are typically interested in even minor details of the objects of their fandom and spend a significant portion of their time and energy involved in their interest, often as a part of a social network with particular practices, differentiating fandom-affiliated people with from those who have just a casual interest. So there's a big difference between just like kind of casually liking Star Wars and like dressing as a character for a significant portion of your life.
Sure. Those seem pretty different. and I think too, just to kind of acknowledge, like there are all kinds of fandoms, and primarily we're going to be talking about the books, the movies, and, you know, to maybe some hosts' dismay, the comics, but we can't say for sure.
We will. Yeah. We're so like, I just want to acknowledge also that there are definitely fandoms like for specific celebrities.
Sure.
Like, you know, Kesha has animals and
younger
celebrities
have other fandoms.
The Beehive. Everyone who's obsessed with Real Housewives. I feel like that's a fandom.
That I agree.
Oh my God. I've never thought of that.
Those are, I don't know. Okay. I don't know if I would consider
like Bachelor Nation. Sorry. Guilty as charged.
I don't know if musician fans are fandoms though. Aren't those stands?
But like the Grateful Dead people, they're definitely a fandom.
The Deadheads, yeah.
But I mean, like it operates in different rules than fandoms do. Like,
there's no not usually cosplay.
Well, Kiss fans, that's a cosplay.
Didn't it come from the Stan lyric? Like, isn't that technically like musicians? People stan musicians.
So to be like 1,000% honest, like that's a term that like is only kind of got its foot in the door of my vocabulary at this point.
Oh, okay.
So we're gonna need to just put some more parameters around that.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't know. It's just curious. I never thought about being like a big musician fan as being a part of a fandom. But I guess of course that's true.
That there's overlap in the way that they operate, in that like if you
think of
the Venn diagram of like literature world fandoms and like movie world fandoms versus like fandom of a person, you could be dressing up. Like people dress up as Johnny Depp all the time. But like I think that the overlap is probably like the community. And
sure.
I would venture to guess that like literature fandoms have perhaps a more positive community than celebrity fandoms, but that's just a wild guess from me.
I feel like my personal experience is yes, because, and I'm sure we'll get into this, because there is a little bit of like pitting book fandoms against each other from time to time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we've watched, you know, Harry Potter and Twilight fans yell at each other and also people be a part of both fandoms.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But I think to Jamie's point, I feel like celebrity stuff is a little bit more tumultuous.
It's Twitter, just like Twitter explodes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't know that like Harry Potter fan. Well, that's probably a bad example. But I don't know that like some other fans are doing that as intensely about books on Twitter as they are if like their idols are fighting with each other. So
yeah, it's just there's like more at stake when there's actual human people involved.
Wow. There it is.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
I couldn't agree more. But I guess kind of to that point of like fandom breakdowns, Jill, Michael, I'm curious, do you guys identify as members of any specific fandoms? And if so, what are they?
Of any kind.
I actually don't know, because that definition is exactly how I think fandoms are. And I feel like there should be some middle place for people who aren't like that intense about it, but are definitely more than casual.
Beyond a casual fan.
Yeah, like somewhere like above average. And that's how I feel about most of the things that I love deeply. And I think it's because like, this might be wrong, but I think that fandoms really, really took off. I think when we were just a little bit on the older side of the average fandom age, like we were upper college.
When like internet fandoms took off, because like
literally that's what I was about to say. Yes.
Cosplay existed, but then like Tumblr happened when we were in college.
Like, the ability to be in communication with fans across the globe.
And you don't have to drive to a convention.
Yeah, it was at a point where we were like already formed. So I don't know. I think I didn't need it as much as younger kids did. So I don't know. I don't think I am, but I think I'm very barely not.
Okay.
I think this is a good call too, and to, you know, be transparent, like Jamie, Michael, and I, Austin, all graduated college the same ish time.
Yeah.
And Jill, you graduated college earlier than us. So do you have similar feelings about fandoms playing into kind of your stage in life or any particular ones that you identify with?
Yeah, I think this has been an interesting conversation for me so far, because I don't feel like growing up, like when I was in high school, I don't recall anyone being in a fandom of any kind. Mm. I don't think that was a thing.
Did you know like any Trekkies or anything? Because there's those people.
Yeah, there were those people, and there were like people who were into trains.
Oh, yeah. My grandpa, yes.
No, that's a thing. That's a person.
I don't know. That's all I came up with. I will say, though, that after watching Oprah interview Meghan Markle, I might become a Meghan Markle fandom person.
Am I a Markle? Yeah, I think I'm a Markle.
I don't know how you get in her fandom, but I want to apply.
I like this.
Whatever the process is.
Yeah.
I'm ready. I'll come to Montecito. Whatever's necessary.
I mean, to be honest, I actually like that you brought this up, because I feel like we should call out Oprah as like a fandom. I feel like people are part of like Oprah's tribe. Like, I feel like that is, I mean, yeah. I feel like most people love Oprah. Like,
Totally.
You have to question people who hate Oprah. Yes. Like, something's a little awry.
Yes.
Open Gale's Big Adventure was great.
I remember that. They fought a lot.
Irrelevant.
You guys might not be old enough to remember this, but there was a whole book written. There was a lady who decided to, I'm obsessed with books where people try to do something for a year.
Yes, you are.
And there was, oh gosh, I can't remember the name of it. There's a person who decided to watch a whole season, a year of Oprah, and do and buy all the things that were recommended on the program.
Oh my God.
And she had a blog. It was back when people blogged.
Yeah.
And then it became a book.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
This is a great idea.
I love this idea so much, actually. And I also, when you mentioned on a previous episode of Book It about being someone who is a really big fan of people who are like, I'm going to do something for a year. I'm currently reading a book where someone is like, I'm going to do something for a year, and was when that episode came out, because somebody's a slow reader.
Same.
And it really excited me, as that being identified as a genre of things you could be excited about, because I do love that kind of stuff.
Genre fandom.
Yeah, I need to think of a thing to do for a year, because I'm dying. I love these books.
Yeah, we need to find that for you, Jill.
Hmm.
I love it.
I know.
Jamie, do you think that you identify as part of any fandom? Is that something that you would apply to yourself?
I feel like I am a kind of person who is perhaps like highly susceptible to like fandoms, because I really like the extended fantasy element.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I am not a big reader of fan fiction, but I think conceptually that it's interesting, because I want anyone to take a stab at writing the prequel to the Harry Potter series that is a Hannibal Lecter style book, where we see Voldemort make all of the Horcruxes, because I want to know more about that part of the world. Mm. And so like in that way, like I love fandoms, and I think it's amazing to like expand upon like an environment, a world, like a situation that is like a template kind of that like everyone loves. Like how when the Gilmore Girls reboot came out, like it wasn't good, but everyone wanted to watch it because you wanted to be back in that world again. And so in that way, I think that like I do really love fandoms, but am I like a part of one? No, I don't think I ever have been, because I've never like engaged communally with anything except when Harry Potter's were coming out and the three of us and some other people did like various parties for book releases and things. But I think I was always too embarrassed embarrassed, and maybe this would drive us into like another point, but I had like quite a bit of embarrassment about even like reading Harry Potter. Like,
I remember that.
Like, I like didn't want my parents to know that I was reading.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah, you hid them in your closet.
I would read it in the closet, like literally funny foreshadowing. But yeah, I think I was like too ashamed of like the nerd elements of being a part of a fandom to ever engage in it. But I think I probably would have loved it because I was like a very imaginative kid and teen.
It's interesting too, because like, To be embarrassed about something that was so wildly popular, yep. like everyone was reading yep. those.
I wasn't embarrassed at school though. I wasn't embarrassed in front of my peers. I was only embarrassed in front of my family.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Subscribe, comment, like.
I mean, I definitely fall into the camp that Harry Potter is probably the closest to like a fandom that I feel yeah. like I ever identified with. Mm-hmm. I'm also someone who is a really big consumer to this day of commentary. Like I want to hear I really want to hear what people have to say about books or movies, but to be honest, like, and Jamie can testify to this, like I watch so little television and so few movies, but I constantly have ones to recommend to people because I listen to people review them all the time, and I'll be like, this documentary sounds amazing. I recommended one to friends this weekend that I was like, you can stream it online, it's not on a platform but it is on YouTube. People are like, have you seen this? And I said, no, but I heard a conversation about it. I'll probably never watch it, but it sounds great. I was like, I think you guys would love it. It's about dogs.
Oh my God.
I really lean into that. And so like, I have been a really long time listener of like, since, you know, like middle school, like long time to some that are the same and some that aren't, of like Harry Potter podcasts. Definitely somebody who is like very engaged in like the online community of people. For sure, oh MuggleNet, like that. In its heyday, of digging in and like wanting to hear what people theorized and had to speculate right. about. I just like really,
I remember like you doing that and you telling me like the things about like Ollivander's name rearranged was an evil lord.
I was in the chat.
You were deep
room,
in the chat. At AIM time.
I was in the chat.
You had like friends that were just internet friends in middle school.
I absolutely had Harry Potter internet friends. And so I think to that point, I'm like, isn't that being in the fandom?
Yeah,
but
it is.
To your point, Jamie, I feel like identifying as like a part of a fandom is something that gives me like light embarrassment feelings that, and maybe it's because I'm never somebody who's been like, in cosplay. And so I'm like, if I'm not doing that,
you don't like
I'm not going to
days.
Conventions. Right. I mean, it gives me the heebie-jeebies, but I'm like, I think I am part of the fandom, but there is a little bit of shame for whatever reason in admitting to that because it feels like nerdy or
sure. It's funny other. Because nerd has had totally, especially in adolescence, I think like you are going to run from anything that makes you stand out. And then like, I think in our young adulthood, like nerd culture became like
super mainstream. Super,
yes, like
super mainstream.
was the zeitgeist.
And also cool. It became cooler later.
Yeah.
It became okay to be into fantasy. It became okay to be like, I like to read. You
totally.
Know, we finally hit a period in which you could say that.
Yeah. Which I think is another conversation about like the how the internet changed the conversation in general, because like, I think part of what made us feel nerdy or unpopular for it was because it would cause too much attention on us. But then the internet opened up and we're like, oh, everyone's doing this. Why am I embarrassed?
And is it just fantasy, though, that has
for sure
that? Is it just fantasy and sci-fi and like, or like perhaps maybe like there's room for Jane Austen to also be like an embarrassing potentially fandom?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. I wasn't thinking about the embarrassing part.
But as far as, I mean, it definitely can be a fandom, I think, and people are like obsessed with that world. And there's like the text from, what is it?
Yeah, text from Jane Austen. Yes, yeah, I definitely, if somebody invited me, I would go on one of those Jane Austen tours of England and wear a Regency outfit every day.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I love that.
I totally would. I don't know that I would like organize one myself, but if somebody invited me, I'm there. Yeah,
you should organize it for yourself. Actually, that would be like the dream for you, is to be able to organize. As long as like someone else like makes it happen, I want you to be able to do whatever you want while you're there. But doesn't that feel different? There's something like historical there that feels like.
Yes. Yeah. And that kind of brings us to like, we wanted to talk a little bit about like the longevity of fandoms. And like, we're talking about like Harry Potter's not really very embarrassing because it was so popular when we were exactly the right age. And so our peers all loved it too. But I kind of feel like fantasy and sci-fi gets this embarrassing quote or like bad rep.
Yeah.
Maybe from a time like before I'm cognizant of, because of like Star Wars and Star Trek and that kind of thing. And I just, I don't know, like, Jill, I don't know if it's a weird question to ask you, but do you have like any insight about like the development of like that being embarrassing? Because for people who were in high school at the time we were, it wasn't as much, I think.
I remember being surprised early in my librarian career. It has always been the case where you would see, it was usually a pack of girls and they would get into a series or a section and all of them are reading the same thing together. What seemed to change very early was that it went from being like very clicky, where like little groups were all doing different things, where all of a sudden, and I do think Michael's point about the internet is the root of this. All of a sudden, it wasn't one group doing this and one group doing that, one group doing another. It was every single person on the planet is reading Harry Potter. Wow. Every single person is reading Twilight. So it just, all the phenomenons became huge. And it wasn't just in Kid Lit. I mean, I remember when everybody read, what's the book? And then Tom Hanks was in the movie. That didn't tell you anything.
Da Vinci Code.
Oh, Da Vinci Code.
Wow.
Dan Brown.
The Da Vinci Code, yes.
This podcast loves the Da Vinci Code.
Jamie and I talk a lot about Dan Brown from time to time on our
and
show.
And the effect he's had on culture.
Yeah, for sure. No, but yes, you're right, Jill. Like,
yeah, I mean, everybody was talking about that book. And priests were having round tables at the library.
Oh, my God.
You were like, how many priests are in my contact list? I need to have a library program. It just felt like social media and the internet, it made everything bigger. And so instead of a book being, you know, like a trickle here or there, it was like everybody's doing something at the same time. Mm.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it being so like kind of centralized on the internet around like more specific books, movies, etc., like, do you feel like there's more pressure to really like or enjoy something? Like, does Bookstagram culture kind of like ever detract from the experience of being a fan of something?
I think yes. And I think that,
yeah,
I think everything has like a peak before it like levels out. And I think that, especially with Bookstagram, In the ways that the internet has made it wonderful for these types of conversations, like we're saying, like we met people who liked this thing that we thought was dumb. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. The other side of it, there are these weird, not real, but totally real rules that the internet has created around how to connect with or respond to something, in this case, books. And we've talked a lot about this on our podcast about how like, I think Bookstagram can be a little bit toxic, and there's more of an emphasis on how many books am I reading versus am I like connecting with what I'm reading in any way, or am I like actually enjoying it? So I think like I think Bookstagram is lovely, and I've found a lot of really amazing people on there and books that I ended up loving, but there's this weird like pressure to like something that you maybe didn't because everybody else does.
Sure.
And to like shift your reading goals based off of like what everyone's doing right now, which in this case is just reading 1,000 books a week.
I also feel like it introduces a lot of gatekeeping.
Yes.
Like you can't be a Bookstagrammer or you can't be a book person if you don't do XYZ.
Right.
I think Michael and I are both like, that's,
forget
are
it.
Are we cussing? I was gonna be like, that's all bullshit.
It's fuck balls that, out on this podcast. You say whatever you want.
I hate gatekeeping.
Me too.
And I do think that's a fan. Well, it happens in so many things, but it's so easy for it to happen in fandoms.
Totally, yes.
Oh, you're right. There is like an attitude of like I'm more versed in this literature or fandom or like,
yes,
it's like when you say that you like a band or if someone's wearing a band t-shirt, it used to be a thing to be like, name three songs that exactly band plays.
Right. Instead of just like, I graphically like this t-shirt and that's okay.
Yeah.
Or just like being like, I like to read. So like, I loved these books, but I don't know like every single minutia detail
I read this about quickly.
The world.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to. That doesn't make me less of a fan or less of a reader.
Yeah.
I think one thing I too really appreciate about Book It, and honestly, like enjoying your podcast has made me feel confident in talking about reading and enjoying it.
Honestly. Aww.
Because I feel very self-conscious about what a slow reader.
You got some
I
slow
am.
Readers over here. Yeah.
On this podcast. Also somebody, honestly, who's like easily distracted and like, yeah. You know, I currently have read about a third of this book. And then for the last month, I've just carried it around from room to room and slept next to it. So.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
And you guys make me feel not bad about that.
Yeah. You shouldn't.
And so thank you. Because I do hear you on being like, well, I can't be part of the club if I don't X, Y, and Z. And it's interesting too. One of the other things I kind of think about fandoms, and I don't know if you guys, anybody else kind of feels this about any particular fandom, but I think one of the things that I, especially when I was younger, you know, like late elementary school, middle school, one of the things I really appreciated about being in to any kind of series or something was maybe also the element of it being a little secret. And the one that readily comes to mind is Lemony Snicket series of Unfortunate Events. And
I forgot.
And Jamie also loved these books. And I think one of the things that's so cool about it is there are all these like kind of underlying secret things going on. And there's a secret society and there are like books about the society and codes. And that to me was really fun. And that existed in a way, or at least my experience in the way I engaged with it. I was not in like all the chat rooms and hearing, you know, the Discord that people had to say in the same way it was about Harry Potter. It felt very much like this puzzly thing that felt like secret. And I was like in on the secret and I had like one friend that I talked to about
it. Me.
And right. And it was. And that was like its own kind of fun experience.
Sure, yes, community.
It felt like we had secret mischief we were up to all the time.
Right, but I think if those books had the, you know, hype and everyone was reading them in the same way that people were reading Harry Potter, I actually don't think I would have enjoyed it as much. I think it would have taken away from the secret themes of the books. I don't know, do you guys feel like there's anything about something feeling like really personal that makes it better?
But also I think that, and I'm speaking, I think just for myself, but Harry Potter specifically was the first time I'd ever like read something as it was happening and seeing it finish. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that I loved reading until after I finished the series, because it was like the most satisfying experience of like, it wasn't a series that had been out. It wasn't Lord of the Rings that had been out for decades. It wasn't something else. It was something that was coming out, and it felt like it didn't just feel like reading. It felt like an experience that we were having at the same time because it was happening right now. And I think that aspect of it, I think it's less of like, how many people are reading this? Would I feel nerdy? I think it's more about, for me, it was about that feeling of like urgency because it was happening at the same time as I was experiencing it.
There was an urgency too, I think, to like finishing them, like the Harry Potter specifically.
That's another thing with fandoms.
Like, they would, with fandoms that are actively releasing content, even with like Game of Thrones, watching it, not just reading it, like there is the pressure to finish as quickly as possible in order to be able to engage in the fandom without experiencing any spoilers. And there's
that's going to say not be spoiled,
right?
For sure.
This like manic,
which is a much bigger problem now, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I know that Marvel is not popular with everyone, but
it's fine.
It's been really interesting. I had never seen any Marvel. I didn't know anything about it. And my husband said, oh, let's watch WandaVision. And I was like, fine. So we watched like the first episode and he turned it off and he goes, what do you think? And I was like, I don't get it.
Sure. That might happen when you haven't seen a Marvel.
And he was like, well, you know the backstory, right? And I was like, no. I don't. So then he talked in what sounded to me like gibberish for like 10 minutes. And then I tried to repeat it back. And apparently my understanding was all wrong. Uh-huh. And he goes, well, we should just really watch the movies. And now that we have Disney Plus, we can like watch them in chronological order and not in the order they were released. And blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And I was like, no, you know, I'm good. Let's just keep watching. And then we get like two more episodes in and I like ask one more question and he's like, we really need to like watch all the movies. And then the kids got excited. Oh. And this is where the fandom bites you in the ass, because then I was outnumbered.
Yes.
And so then we started on this mission. We are now watching all the movies.
This is brand new information. I didn't know this.
You didn't? Oh, okay. We're six movies in now. It's been going on for two weeks. Oh, shit.
Okay.
2 weeks. Wow. Six of these movies. And so I've been writing up little summaries of them on Twitter. And it's been really funny because a couple of our friends are really big comic book people. Uh-huh. And they've just been finding the whole thing hilarious because it is very much like an outsider's perspective.
Oh, yeah. I like that though, actually.
Yeah, because like we got to we had watched like two Iron Man movies and I was like, Pepper Potts is stupid. And please don't send me hate mail. Mark was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I don't care if you have a shoot 'em up suit and a giant house in Malibu. If you bring me a food I'm allergic to for my birthday, I'm not in love with you.
Yeah.
No.
That is very fair.
Yeah, no, just no. So, but it's been really interesting because either people who disagree or just keep scrolling, which is great. But a couple of people who have commented back have been like, this is just fascinating from like, I don't know, almost like a anthropological perspective. I have no idea what's going on.
It's like if you had someone who had no exposure to Harry Potter at all,
I have to plug this. There is a podcast. It's called Potterless, and it's about a grown man in like the last couple years who has never touched anything Harry Potter and does it all for the first time and commentates on it. And it's super cool if you want to enjoy, like, again, an outsider's perspective, because Harry Potter, to your point, is an example of something where like there aren't a lot of outsiders left.
Yeah.
That is very true.
I'm curious about this because, Jill, you've got your kiddos who are excited about the Marvel journey. And we're talking a little bit generationally about like when things shifted for us. What are your kids into? Are there fandoms in their life? Are they Marvel fans? Like, what
I couldn't even think of anything for children right now.
Yeah. Truman's really into Harry Potter. So Mark is over the moon and he's very much in that place where, again, Disney Plus, we've watched The Mandalorian and there's animated series and that go in between all the movies. And he can get the books where you can like know the name of like every single background character and their backstory. And he gets going sometimes. And even my husband, who is also into it, is like, no one can see me. I mean, just like, you don't know where to jump in because it's like he's speaking a foreign language.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just totally. It's way, way, way over my head. I have seen the Star Wars movies. They're nice.
Well, I'll tell you this. I had a college professor, a marketing professor who previously worked for Mattel when they owned all the rights to all the Star Wars stuff, and so they were making all the toys, and so Mattel representatives would be at the conventions, you know, showing you the new action figures or whatever it was. And my professor said fans used to come at him kind of like, well, you guys don't know whatever, and he goes, and to know everything, and people would be like, wow, you really know this stuff. But he was also like, yo, it was like my job to know that stuff because that was how I fed my family, so I was like ready to come for these Star Wars fans. But what a journey that people were like coming after the toy sellers at conventions too, of like, are you even allowed to be here?
Right.
That's insane.
So, you know, kind of digging in even further to some of like the senses of community and the way participating in fandoms really affects us psychologically. I was kind of, you know, scouring the internet for like good resources that were going to really lay it out for me. And we really didn't come up with something that really exemplified that. But one of the things that I found really interesting that I did read a little about was just about how much fan cultures are examples of participatory cultures. Mm. Basically just meaning that like participatory cultures, the fans are acting like not only as the consumers, shout out to the commodities and, you know, all of capitalism that we're alluding to, but also as the producers and creators as some form of creative, you know, media, whether it's
fan fiction,
the podcasts
costumes.
And stuff.
Right.
Exactly. Cosplay, however you're doing it. And when I was reading about that, it's funny, the kind of like nostalgic thing it made me feel was like, huh, I don't know if I'll experience kind of fandom or feeling engrossed in a real participatory culture again in the same way that I felt like I did with Harry Potter. And it made me feel like a little like, oh, like nostalgic qualities of like, I don't know if I'll get to do that again.
Yeah.
And it also is like a way that when you find out someone maybe participates a little bit in a fandom that you do, it's kind of the way to, I don't know, start a conversation, a friendship.
For sure. Connection point for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And so do you have kind of specific feelings or times in your life? I know we've talked about like personal journeys, but a time that maybe you felt like it created a sense of community for you?
Michael had a Harry Potter club that he started.
Well, oh, that's true.
Well, I was going to say, like, that makes total
sense. Jill,
do
you not know that? Sorry, Jill's face.
This was brand new information to me. I knew that Harry Potter was deeply meaningful to you, but founding a club?
Yeah.
That's next level.
You made an official club at UC.
It became an official club. I would not be surprised. Well,
a university club?
Yes, Jill. Yes, she did. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to. Someone else made it official, like did the work, reached out to the university. Like that was not me or.
If we don't want to say co-founder, you were on board at the beginning.
No. We definitely started it. Okay. Yeah, exactly. I was like under.
You were the co-founder.
I was the head boy.
Oh, yeah.
And Jill, actually, guess who was head girl?
Mm-hmm. Guess.
I don't know.
Lily.
Oh my goodness. I love this story already.
And so we were having these discussions about the book in class, and it was one of the best classes I've ever taken. And one day my professor lived in Louisville and she had a really long commute.
That's ridiculous.
School.
Sorry. Go on. That's irrelevant. Like what?
Well, and so then one day she came into class, was like, my car is really fucked. Like I'm canceling class. And so we were like, oh. And so then Lily and I just stayed back in the empty classroom and talked for like 2 hours about Harry Potter. And then our relationship formed in that conversation. And then we decided like, obviously there's an interest here beyond like the classroom and our personal interest in the series. Like, let's start a club. And from there it took off. But my relationship with Harry Potter starts way before that and like in even more personal ways.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it affected your community around enjoying this series? Do you feel like it affected at all your sense of identity?
The club or Harry Potter?
I guess both. And they can be separate.
Yes. Well, it's hard to talk about because of just the recent past with.
For sure.
Yeah.
But I do want to, I think what makes it so heartbreaking is how important it was to me. And when I was coming out, I was like 19, super alone. I lived in a single dorm and had like definitely come out to myself and was going through like the waves of disappointment and like unhappiness about it. And truly just kind of at random, because it was in my nature, just like grabbed a book and started reading. And it was Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. And I'd read the books before and I was already an above average fan, but it wasn't fandom level, I don't think. And in Goblet of Fire is when Hagrid is quote unquote outed as a half giant. Oh. And everyone
I just got chills.
Is talking about like, well, we kind of knew it isn't that big of a deal, but it is a huge deal in that world. And to Hagrid, it's a huge deal. Mm-hmm. And the trio led by Hermione, I think it's important to say, like, go to Hagrid's hut and are just like lovingly impatient with him and saying like, we don't care. Like, we love you. We don't care that you're half giant. And the person that's in there is Dumbledore, who is canonically gay. And there's a lot of conversation about the way she presented that. And I understand the criticism. Mm-hmm. Saying to Hagrid, you can't make everyone happy. Like, if you're reaching for universal popularity, you're going to be hiding in this cabin for a long time. And that was really when like the Wizard of Oz moment happened in my life, where like everything kind of went into Technicolor, and I was like, okay, like I can't worry about that if I'm going to be authentic. Mm-hmm. And it like really in not casual terms saved my life, and is why I get really upset and emotional thinking about just what's happened with it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah. And then the Harry Potter series, or I'm sorry, the Harry Potter club years later, I had just broken up with like my first same-sex relationship, and really then felt like it was when I was coming out, because I like came out and really quickly was in this relationship, and then we broke up, and I realized like I gave myself no time to like figure out who I am, and that was really important. I look back on that time with a lot of love for myself, honestly, and just think like I look back with a lot of patience, and in that most of my really important relationships came to be, and one of those is Lily, and that came from the Harry Potter Club.
I love that. I think too, I like candidly, I have never thought about that experience with Hagrid being outed as a half giant as something that resembled like an LGBT coming out story. And I'm sure people have discussed it that way, but I've never heard it discussed that way. That's totally really cool.
I think that, yes, the Hagrid moment is a huge part of like kind of like I think LGBT plus people probably notice that moment more than other people. But beyond like the acceptance of Hagrid, I think that Harry Potter as a whole, or any book where you have a main character who is presented like as other. So even like Roswell, the TV show where they were teen aliens, like,
sure.
I think that LGBTQ plus people really dive into and enjoy those books, medium, fandom, whatever, where, the main character is like not fitting in their regular life. Like Harry in Muggle world, like it doesn't work. And there's like this other stuff that's like special about him, but he has to like find that community of people. And I think that that through line, and in Roswell, like the alien children finding each other, I think that a lot of LGBTQ people really identified with that part of Harry Potter also. Like, oh, I have this secret life. I know what it's like to live in a cupboard under the stairs, you know? And so, yes, it's the Hagrid moment, but it's also the entire theme of the series, right. I think
it really speaks to what is so hurtful and damaging about the situation with J.K. Rowling.
Yeah.
Because the books are so much about the power of love and the power of friendship and being who you are. And, you know, both with Harry, but you see it even in the not the main characters, like Neville Longbottom, for example.
Oh, wow.
And so when you, and then giant fandoms build up a feeling because they want to spread this themes of love and acceptance and friendship. And then the creator of that experience and that world turns out to not embody those values.
Staunchly.
I think it kind of leaves you adrift.
I totally agree, Jill. And this is why we, on Book It, we've, from the very beginning, we've talked about this, because she has in no way made it a secret that her views do not mirror what she's told everybody.
She has not made
children.
It easy for
and,
us.
And, it's just been really complicated and hard. And in regard with, in terms of fandoms, I think people, it's the part of fandom that I think can be kind of toxic, where it's like, on one hand, there's one side of the fandoms who love the source material and then kind of shit all over any adaptation or anything.
Oh, you're right.
Possible.
It's not quote unquote canon. So
which is like it. I will never understand. Like every adaptation is an abridgment. Like that is the nature of adaptations. So like if you go into it looking for a carbon copy, you're going to be disappointed. They are different mediums. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other camp that is too forgiving and can't be critical or I think they feel I don't know. I understand the impulse to not want to because it means so much. I think like the easiest thing for us to do is if someone who is a marginalized person is saying this person or this thing is hurting me, is for us to be like, you are right. Mm-hmm. I am sorry. And I'm not going to participate in this anymore. It is heartbreaking. And it's been hard, like emotionally, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. it just sucks. And it sucks mainly for the people who it's hurting. And then, yeah. and it's just really complicated. I also think that because of it, fans have felt more free to confront aspects of the book that also just haven't mm-hmm. aged well outside of it.
Yes.
There's like kind of a lot of fat phobia. There's
fat phobia.
And I think that's so fair. I think I think it's okay to say, I loved this and it's disappointing me.
It was written by a person who is a three-dimensional flawed person. And like a lot of her biases came through in the text and we're realizing some of that now.
Yeah.
I think one thing that's interesting that Jill, you might have a little insight on that we don't, is how do you navigate this as a parent when, you know, we're talking about how do we engage with something that was mm-hmm. important to us, but I don't know how I would navigate Oof. Someone else saying to me, like, I've never, you know, read that, like, I want to read these, and not just to the, you know, Michael's point, the things that are being said currently that yeah. are so hurtful, but also things that didn't age well, like the extreme fat phobia that we see reoccur with a lot of characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard. And I don't know. I don't know that our approach is typical, but the books are still hugely, very widely read. Mm-hmm. At least in amongst our kids and their friends and classmates. And you don't want to create a situation where your kid is the oddball out because everybody yeah. else is aware of a pulp culture thing and they're entirely clueless about it.
I wasn't allowed to watch Rugrats, so I understand.
Right. Oh. Right. It's like you have to pick your battles. And I went for Fortnite and let Harry Potter go.
Okay.
So, you know, there's that.
Yeah.
But we do... Pippa has read all the books now. I love that you were talking about The Goblet of Fire because she and I have this little thing going. That's her favorite of the series. And I was always really down on it, but I feel like the two of you are working on me about it. And she really, really loves them. And she goes back and rereads them quite a bit. And so last year, she's 12 now. About 12 and a half. So I would say when she was 11 and a half, 12, I felt like, you know, she has gay people in her life. She is aware of what that means. And so I felt like we could have a conversation about J.K. Rowling and about trans issues, and that she could, at a 12-year-old level, a little bit understand. I did really, really press that she doesn't need to feel bad because she likes the books and she should keep reading them if she likes them. But I also just wanted her to be aware. Mm-hmm. The rest of our kids haven't engaged with them as much. Penny read the first book and liked it, and she got to the Chamber of Secrets and really felt like it was too scary for her so far. Mm. But it's definitely, and it's challenging for me too, because I loved like Little House on the Prairie growing up.
Oh my God, that was my gateway into books. I love Laura Ingalls Wilder so much. I wanted to live in a dugout.
Right.
Jill, this is so your language.
I would, but I have not given that book to our kids.
Yeah.
And so it becomes really challenging for me because I feel like I need to be more thoughtful. Like, what's the difference?
Sure.
And why would I give them Harry Potter and not Little House? Mm-hmm. Because both become I guess one is the author and one is the content of the book, but I don't know. It's very, very complicated, but I would say that generally most kids, it's still really widely read and very popular. And I don't think a lot of kids are clued into anything about J.K. Rowling or her opinions and feelings.
It's almost like when we're given required reading in school and it's like something that is just like problematic and it's like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then in the course of the of being required to read it, part of the discussion is that it's problematic.
Yeah.
And that's a hard one for me too, because teaching is so incredibly hard and I don't ever want to be down on a teacher, but some of the reading lists that have come home, I'm like, hey,
why?
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know. Island of Blue Dolphins was on one of the kids' lists. And I was like, hey, just wanted to make you aware. Like, here's like three articles. And like, if you wanted like a Native American experience book, like here's three newer ones that are better.
Yeah. We have a two-parter about this in season one.
Yeah. Like I just, yeah, it's really, really hard. And I love
that you're bringing this up because I went to an all-girls high school. And I think because of that, we were really able to engage in a way that I know I wouldn't have at a co-ed school about classic literature and what was wrong about it with women. I specifically, and I don't remember this poet's name, but he was like, you know, a big wig at the time of like, I don't know, many of the famous British poets, but I remember reading it in Brit Lit, and this is graphic, so get ready. Mm-hmm. But essentially we read this part, we're reading it out loud in class, and my teacher is like, okay guys, like, what's he saying? And everybody's like, I don't really know. And like one by one, people slowly got it. And we were like, oh my God. The poem is like a love poem. It is celebrated like in the canon of like English poets, like writing to woo women. And the exact like translation of the poem into like modern day is like, listen, babe, have sex with me because, you know, if you die tomorrow, when you're decaying in the ground, you're going to swim up your vagina anyway. And you won't be a virgin. And the conversation,
it's like the worms doc take your hymen or some shit.
Yes, 100%. Like, honestly, and the conversation we were able to have, though, one, as a 16 year old, I would not have been comfortable having in front of boys, but also my professor, like a woman, she was like, y'all, like, people celebrate this in like literature canon. She goes, this is messed up. And I am so grateful that was absolutely my academic experience as, you know, a young woman growing up. But I think about how we need spaces where it's, you know, I was in a space where we could talk about like, this is messed up about how they're talking about women. But I think we're still, and those spaces aren't everywhere, but I think we even, you know, have fewer to be like, this is messed up about how it's talking about the LGBT community. This is messed up about how it's talking about Black people or other people of color. And to be like in a room that's like, you know, predominantly white and male, you might not have those conversations. Totally.
Absolutely.
What if I was like, as a white male, what if I was like, I don't agree, you're wrong.
Those are your projections.
And I can say that because I'm gay.
Oh my God.
Like, what? I'm oppressed.
Oh my God. That's excellent. As Jill was talking earlier, I thought of this, and I just think that it's so interesting that J.K. Rowling chose to write from a male main character when I kind of feel like the crux of her transphobia is her feminism. Like, she's pushing trans women out of the space of feminism so constantly that tells me that she's like really worried about like any type of masculinity being in that space. Yes. And so why would you choose to write your main character as a teen boy? I just don't understand.
Well, and then write under a male pseudonym.
Correct. And I think that's probably just like internalized oppression stuff that flips around and comes back out at other people.
Yeah.
That's all. Maybe there's not anything to talk about there, but I had to call her out for that or something.
But that's which is a layered reason why this sucks, because I like
it's her that it's own written, oppression that's making this happen.
But because like writing from a male's perspective, I'm sorry, writing a male main character in a wildly popular series.
Mm-hmm.
This, I don't know how to say this because I don't believe in like gender norms, but she offered Harry a lot of emotion that I don't know a male character would have done. Oh. And it allowed boys to feel emotional, and because we saw emotional boys and I liked that. Wow. I felt really like allowed. Mm-hmm. And well, I go ahead, please, Jill, interrupt me.
Well, the other thing I really like about her, about Harry as the central character, is that it's a boy who is hurting, but it's not that kind of male, like broken, like, oh, someone's going to come and fix me. It's more like I'm hurting, but I'm surrounded by my friends and I'm working on it. And nothing he achieves in that book is like single-handedly like I'm a superhero. It's like I did this with cooperation and friendship. Which makes that's it also so weird.
That's also so LGBTQ though, because the idea of like chosen family and like being like I'm in pain but I'm figuring it out, and like I'm surrounding myself with the people that are like helping me, like, you know, find my magic, if you
absolutely
will. Be it real or just gay magic.
Well, and I feel like it normalizes family estrangement in a way that you don't see a lot in like kids literature at all.
That's
and Matilda.
Part of it. Oh my God. And Matilda. Yeah. I loved Matilda.
Yeah. I love Matilda.
Miss Honey was a hottie. I just have to say that.
We can all agree to that.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's also why, like, I totally understand why people are upset about the way that Dumbledore is presented as gay, is because it feels...
And when you say that, you mean that she announced it not after in the book, post, outside of it, after all of it.
Yes, and I get that people are like, why not just put it in the text? Like,
I kind of feel like there was always just room for him to be gay, and it wasn't... she didn't choose. And that's why
it doesn't bother me, because I think that kind of conversation is... it gets a little too close to, like, the right way to be gay. And he has always read gay to me. And I think that as a closeted young person, it would have been harder for me. I think I wouldn't have read these books because I would have been afraid to out myself if he had just been like wildly openly like saying I'm gay, I'm gay. It felt like some space for me to like be closeted with him in some way.
And also, I think that it not naming him as gay, but rather kind of just giving, it's not a reveal. It's right. Maybe a soft reveal is the biggest thing I would say, when we learn about sort of his relationship with what's that other wizard's name? Grindelwald. Yeah. Grindelwald, excuse me. I'm not a German.
Out of the club.
Yeah.
Get it right or you're not allowed to talk about Harry Potter on this podcast, okay? We're going to cut you out.
Keeping these gates tight. But I think that, to your point, if he had been like in a relationship with a man or something in the book, or like it was explicitly named that he was gay, I also would have, I think, as a young closeted gay, felt threatened by that.
Yeah.
But if he can exist as a character where he can just be gay for 900 years or however long he lived, and we're not even talking about it, that's the best case scenario.
Same.
Where he can just date Grindelwald and we know that that's what's happening and we don't give a shit.
It's not his character. Yeah.
Exactly. It's not his arc.
And I will say, maybe to look at another side of it too, because I think I would have loved to see an openly gay character in the Harry Potter series. And I think that would have been really important. But Dumbledore being the role of professor, I guess I can also acknowledge that all the other professors that are in the narrative, we do not see spouses. We do not see love lives. We do not really.
Only like Hagrid. Hagrid's
the only one we see a little bit of flirtation with. But like, we don't hear about it with McGonagall. Like, if you're entrenched in wanting to know the backstories of some characters, like, you hear about, you know, Snape, she had like a long lost love. But it happens outside of the canon. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And Snape and Lily, I said Snake, what is this, Degrassi? but Snape and Lily, to that point, like, it was from like younger years. You don't see so much of like the personal lives of any of the teachers. Nope. So to that credit, I guess I'm like, yeah, well, I guess we saw as much of Dumbledore's love life as we saw of anybody other teacher at the school for the most part.
Yeah.
And so like there's some merit there. But like, I don't know, there could have been gay students. Where were they? Because there definitely was gay students. Years at Hogwarts happened for sure.
Well, and here's the thing. We are not right and we are not wrong. Like, this is just how I feel about it.
Yeah.
And people who...
Yeah.
Who really are like upset that Dumbledore wasn't like overtly meant like said to be gay. Like that is totally fair. And I like totally understand that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. Well, it is about that time in true Why Are You Like This fashion to pivot to a verbal game by cueing the vibraphone.
Cue the vibraphone.
Cue the vibraphone.
And there it is, bringing us into this verbal game. So we're going to hit you with our verbal game question, but Book It has also prepared a game. So if you want to hear that version, which you absolutely should, head over to their feed on Book It Podcast and listen to their version of this episode. All right. So I believe that, Austin, you have a question for the group.
Yeah. So we typically close Why Are You Like This with a verbal game, and you guys got to get in on this because it's the only way to close the show. I don't know, but we do a lot of marry, fuck, kill.
Sure. Yep,
and
you do.
What's kind of evolved into also our own version of things, which we just call like three choices with rules. And this is kind of like in between those.
Okay.
So what I want to say in the style of marry, fuck, kill is I'm going to throw out some universes, but have fandoms surrounding them, but I welcome your own choices of, it doesn't have to be something I've said or even something we've mentioned up until this point on this episode. But for three fandoms of your choosing, one of which you will spend a day in the life, another one you're going to spend a year in the life, and another one is going to be everything else. Like, it's your whole life after that. Your entire life, okay? So
is a crossover with a certain fan universe.
Right. So I'm going to throw out some options, things we've discussed, things that we noodled on, but please add your own. Feel free. But, you know, obviously Harry Potter on the table is discussed. We didn't get super into it. And I know if anybody listens to Book It, y'all have some hot takes on Twilight. So let's get to it. Game of Thrones is another good one. Spinning off of Twilight, you can just go full Monty and say like 50 Shades, let's do it.
Which is like Seattle, isn't it? Like,
I mean, essentially. Star Wars, Marvel, which we talked about.
Right, okay.
Jamie's desire to be a part of Buffy, maybe. We can't know. Michael, can I pitch it to you first?
Yes.
Of where you'd like to spend a day, a year of your life, and then what is going to be like the meat and the bulk of your life for all of time?
Oh, I honestly think a day, I would absolutely like to spend a day in Forks, Twilight.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Just a day, okay. Like, you know, it's like super rainy.
You said Forks, and I was like, what is Forks?
Oh, Forks, it's the home where, of Bella and Edward.
Heard.
Just because it would just be like it's the like quick in and out. And I would love to like
just
witness
touch the world
this.
For 24 hours. Yeah.
Yes. Not me saying I love it. It's boring, but like, so am I.
I love how you're constantly like, Twilight is the most boring book ever, but I love it. But it's so boring.
It's so boring. But it helps me sleep.
I don't know,
like,
that
literally.
People think that though. Do people think Twilight is boring?
Okay. If you have read Twilight and you don't think it's boring, reread it. It is the most boring thing. I had never reread it before. I'd only read it once, and then I reread it. I was like,
it's
this
amazing.
Shit is boring.
Oh my god.
Anyway.
Okay, so that's your one day.
And then
a year
would probably be Prydain, which is the world in one of my all-time favorite series, The Chronicles of Prydain. It's the series that I named my dog after. Mm-hmm. Life, I guess. I mean, it's hard to break up with. Life would probably be Harry Potter.
You can say it. Yeah.
And
it's hard to turn down magic. It really
yeah, but
is.
I also like want to like like that sucks, and I want to find another answer for that someday.
Mm. Ooh, I like that. Challenge accepted. Yeah. Anyone writing books right now, listen, work on the fictional place that we're all trying to spend our whole lives. I love it. Jill, what about you? Where are you headed?
I'm going to embarrass myself.
I love it.
For one day only.
Okay.
I want to go and live on The Bachelor.
Oh my God.
Because I don't understand it.
Jill, my
straight
friend
people
is a
talk
producer.
Amongst yourselves.
Oh, I've never seen it.
I don't watch it either.
Bachelor watcher. I watch The Bachelor, so Jill, like, let's go.
The hair, the outfits,
it's so much.
The
it's
jobs so much. They have. I don't understand any of it. So I just want to go there for a day and just be like,
I love this answer.
Please explain your life to me. I need your whole story. Why are you here?
Yes.
Such a good answer, Jill. Where's your year?
I think if I'm going to spend a year anywhere, I want to go be in a Regency romance.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, right? I want to be in Bridgerton or Jane Austen or, you know, somewhere like that. Yeah. I don't want to put up with being property for like my whole life.
A year's kind of a long time to put up with that.
To get to wear the outfit.
Yeah.
I want to do it.
A year.
Yeah.
A little cosplay. I love this. Just a year of cosplay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for my whole life, Michael won't be surprised to hear this at all. I want to live in Stars Hollow.
Oh my God.
Gilmore Girls. Yes.
I am really disappointed. My head is only in books right now. Like, I changed my answer. My forever is Stars Hollow too.
Yeah, I want to eat at Luke's.
Forget it, authors. We don't challenge revoked. We found a new location. Yeah.
Thank you, Jill.
Yeah, that's me.
Oh, that's so good. Jamie, what are you going to do? What's your one day, your 1 year in your life?
I'm struggling the most with the one day because I feel like I really want to be able to like be a tourist somewhere where I wouldn't really want to live.
That's why I picked Forks.
And so I'm trying to think of like what like the most like dark, interesting book that like terrifies me is. And I think I would like live in like Neil Gaiman world for just one day. Maybe that could be like Neverwhere or I don't know, any American Gods, like whatever book. But to live in kind of like the dark, like strange, unpredictable, magical realism of that, I would only want for one day, but it would be so interesting.
Sure.
And then for 1 year, kind of in the same vein of like, I definitely don't want this to be where I live forever because I would like not be well. But I would want to do 1 year in Twin Peaks. And
oh my God.
Like, I would want to start an investigative podcast and like do 1 year where I like go hard living in Twin Peaks and maybe it's really dangerous. I don't know.
Yes.
It's very dangerous, I'm sure. But then I don't know. I feel like my final answer has to be Harry Potter, but I want to put some stipulations around that and say that I'm approaching this game with the assumption that I am like fully me in my regular life right now, walking into this universe. And
me too.
If I'm in a Harry Potter universe, I'm probably a muggle or like mostly
that's
a muggle.
True.
Oh. And so I would choose to still live in that world. And my life would be that I would live as an imposter saying that I was an orphaned squib and I would start a shop in Diagon Alley and keep it covert that like I didn't have magical parents, but the explanation of why I couldn't do magic would be that I was a squib. So I'd be like, you know, I'd be in the group.
Yes.
I'd be in the community. But I would not really be magic.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with this backstory.
Yeah.
Thank
Jamie's like
really good backstory.
Yeah, Jamie's really good at giving herself like as many realities as she can.
I love this so much.
Austin, what do you pick?
Okay. It's funny. I feel like we took a little bit of a similar trajectory or like mindset about our one day because I was like, what's some dark shit I want to see? And for me, I kind of like I would consider, and I think in particular now, like this is a fandom of sorts that we didn't even really touch on, but like the true crime addicts of the world. And of a fictional universe, I started to be like, oh my God, am I just like on a ride along with Mariska Hargitay?
I was going
to
say, are you going to be an SVU?
And then another part of me was like, or am I like in a book version of that? And am I just like sidecarring with Anne Rule? And I just like want to see Ted Bundy in action at the call center or like any shit she wrote about. Like, I don't, and I, on 24 hours only, y'all. Like, I can't get too close to this. So, my 1 year, this will come as also a surprise to no one who's tuned into us before. I am, look, my favorite genre of film, book, media, anything, television, all forms of anything is coming of age stories. I want to live in the feelings of like doing things for the first time, first loves in particular. I jokingly say that my like favorite movie genre is coming of age love stories where one of the teenagers dies. which if you don't think that's a genre, you're
it's
not.
Absolutely
that's a genre for sure.
It's a genre. But to that point of like coming of age, I think I would want to spend 1 year in Degrassi.
Oh, this is so like, right for you, Austin.
That's I know. Perfect. Thank you so much. It's like every 30 minutes, it's just like someone's like having the biggest experience of their whole life until
and
this
you
point.
Tell Cassie Steele I say hi. Yeah,
I will. I know how you feel about her. I'll say hi to a young Aubrey Drake Graham, you know?
Yeah.
But I really would love to be just like kind of a part of like, I'd want to be like to any fans out there of Next Gen, I would want to be like the Hazel of it. Like, I'd want to be like the friend who like wasn't really involved in most of the drama, but like everybody was telling the shit too. That's how I'd want to be.
I have not seen a single episode of Degrassi. I only know it because you were the only person I knew growing up who watched it.
Oh, I cared about it so deeply. I really still do. And then short and sweet of it, my whole life, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm like effing going to Hogwarts. And in my narrative, I am a witch. I'm Jamie, like, shout out to your backstory, but like, I just want the powers. I sure. just want magic.
Thank you, Michael and Jill, so much for being here. We love Book It. We're like so happy to be in this little pod family with you. So if our listeners who obviously like our show will probably also like your show because they're not like so different. Where can our listeners find you guys on the internet?
So you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Book It Pod or at our website, bookitpod.com. And since we are always talking about books, we have an online bookshop at
bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod.
There you go.
That was so much fun. We love a podcast crossover. We love guests. Yes. Honestly, I want to have like so many more guests. It's just about the orchestration, you know. But anyway, thank you guys so much for being here again. We love Book It. I personally really love Book It. It makes me feel like less alone as a slow reader. I don't know. It just makes me feel good. But yeah, so happy to do this crossover.
So happy to do it. 100%. Interviews are effing treats. Michael and Jill, let you know where you can find them. So as always, we'll let you know where you can find us on the internet via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyyoulikethispod, and on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. And good night, good morning, good day. We'll see you soon.
We sure will. And don't forget to head over to Book It's feed and check out the other verbal game
AOAO
on their episode. Goodbye.
Bye.